Hello and welcome to another episode here at the Damage Report, where I came prepared, where I'm alone in this gigantic building, which is as cold as the core of Antarctica. But today I'm wearing the We Press On hoodie, complete with thumb straps. So I might die, but I'll last a little bit longer this way. LA has discovered winter. Ida Rodriguez, how are you dealing with this new colder world we live in?
I'm doing fine. I'm actually, you know, the possibility that Trump won't be trending every day for the next 4 years is what is giving me good feels. Mm-hmm. You know, I can't tell you that. I know that sounds petty, but that's where I'm drawing my joy for now, because this year has been such a year. I mean, it feels like 10 years. We feel like we've just gone through an entire decade.
Yeah.
This is not even a political statement. Just getting to Twitter and seeing Donald Trump trending for the most ridiculous things every day because mainstream media loves to pump him up. It's just mm-hmm. good to see other things trending, even if some of those things may not be the best things.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, we're very excited to have you on the show today. And what's interesting is that what you just said, Francesca, who's also a comedian, she said something sort of similar on Monday, but I had heard that all of you comedians wouldn't have anything to joke about after Donald Trump. So aren't you horrified that you'll have no material?
No, because you know, I was one of the people who made a decision not to talk about Donald Trump in my comedy because I knew that this would happen. And so I think about those people who have made careers out of talking about Donald Trump. And what are you gonna do now? I mean, not that he will ever stop giving you material as long as he's alive, and even after he's gone. But I just didn't want my stand-up to, I think people are exhausted no matter where they are politically and tired of hearing about him. Cause it was like the Kardashians at some point. They just kept putting the syrup on the pancake and you're like, stop.
Too much syrup in my politics. Yeah. I know what you're saying there. Well, we've certainly got a lot that we're gonna be talking about, including some stuff that's very serious, but also a few things that are, you know, just for chuckles in these dark times. We'll have a little bit of that for you. But everybody who's already watching, whether you're on YouTube or on Twitch or the members or whatever, feel free to like the stream or whatever your platform equivalent is so that people know that we're live. And as you send us in messages, comments, super chats, tweets, all of that, we'll be responding as we go along. We've got so much though, Ida. We might as well launch right into it. What do you think?
Let's go.
Let's do it. Okay. Yesterday was Veterans Day, and a friend of the show, Ken Klippenstein, amazing reporter for The Nation, he has a tradition that he likes to observe on every Veterans Day, and that is trolling and pranking right wingers to get them to retweet things that they didn't take the second or two that would be required to Google it. So he succeeded in grand fashion today. With this tweet, we're gonna walk you through how exactly this worked. So what happens is he tweets to a bunch of right wingers things like this: "Sir, my grandpa is a huge fan of yours. Here he is as a young army lieutenant. If you could shout him out, it'd make his day." And you see there. Well, let's move on to the next photo, and you're gonna see the photo of the supposed grandpa there. So one of the people he sent this to is Richard Grenell, former acting director of national intelligence. And I point out his full title because I want you to remember that intelligence is in the title there. Who tweets at him or DMs him, "What's his name?" To which Ken responds, "Bill Calley," because the guy in the photo is William Calley. But you're gonna find out more about him in just a minute. Richard Grenell doesn't think another second about it, former head of national intelligence, and tweets out, "Thank you for your service, Bill Calley." Bill Calley, it turns out, is kind of important historically. He's an American war criminal. And he was court-martialed for the premeditated killings of 500 unarmed South Vietnamese civilians in the My Lai massacre of March 16th. But you know, that would take a second for you to tweet out, or maybe someone involved in the national defense infrastructure of America. You might be familiar with some of our most notorious war criminals. But apparently that was too much to ask, Ida, and he just tweeted it out.
You know what's funny is that shouldn't it be a requirement that if you are involved in government in some capacity that you have an extensive information base of history of your country? Like I just think, yeah. I think You can learn more history in board games than you can from the American education system. But
I do. That's where I get my history.
We all know, violence. We all know, how to do damage. Where is the information? Where are you getting your information from? And why don't you know this?
Yeah. Well, I mean, here's the thing. So this is a thing that Ken did, very funny. He got to own, this bad guy as he does. And they've done it before with like Jack Nicholson's character from whatever that movie was. They've gotten people to tweet that out, like ridiculous. But the thing is, because of this and this getting news coverage, this does a better job of getting people to recognize and learn a little bit about an American war criminal and this horrendous act that happened during the Vietnam War than almost anything else. I mean, this is like, there's probably, he's trending, Bill Cowley is trending more now than in literally years, including, by the way, on CNN. Watch this.
Be a problem for not just now, but for later on too.
Finally, before I let you go, there was a somewhat remarkable incident yesterday where the former acting director of national intelligence under this president, Rick Grenell, was tricked into sending Veterans Day wishes to a convicted war criminal, William Cowley, who was convicted, court-martialed for the murders of 500 unarmed Vietnamese in 1968. Your response to it was pointed, shall we say. Tell us your thoughts on that.
Well, first of all, I got the same message, okay? And I read that and said, no, I know exactly what he was trying to do. And I said, no, it's wrong. But he, Grenell, did it. It's unbelievable that the secretary, the director of national intelligence did it. It's, to me, unbelievable. But you know, it's par for the course, I'm afraid.
Yeah. Well, General Hayden, thanks so much for joining us this morning. We always appreciate to hear from you.
Well, thank you again.
So Michael Hayden was owning that Rick Grenell on Ken's part, but I love that they don't credit obviously Ken for doing this. But it was pretty funny. And can I throw one little added layer of fun for this? Is that obviously the main point of this story is that Ken has burned Rick Grenell, but I love that in the news coverage of this story, Ken gets burned a little bit too. Take a look at this. This is from a Business Insider article about this incident. Klippenstein, who is most known for his time spent online and his proficiency in submitting FOIA requests to federal agencies, said in his tweet that his grandfather was a huge fan, blah, blah, blah. I love that they have to point out that he's known for being online a lot. That's messed up. Come on.
So is Donald Trump.
Yeah.
So is Donald Trump, the president of the United States of America. I mean, when exactly. I see stuff like this, I go back to our movie Idiocracy. I just feel like this is where we are now.
Oh God, yeah. Kenny Clips are president. He's got all the qualifications that Donald Trump has. Anyway, and he has the same moves. I've seen him dance. It's exactly like Trump dances. Donald Trump ostensibly still implying that he has a chance of becoming president if the Supreme Court overturns hundreds of thousands of votes, or some Republican state legislature decides to give the Electoral College votes to him, even though he didn't earn them. So that's the front-facing, public-facing strategy. Behind the scenes, though, and increasingly on Twitter, his future seems to be trending away from being president. He seems to be accepting it. Mostly, I'm saying this because the reporting implying that he sees a different future. And it looks a little bit like this, with him tweeting things like, Fox News daytime ratings have completely collapsed, weekend daytime even worse. Very sad to watch this happen, but they forgot what made them successful, what got them there. They forgot the golden goose, which I guess is him. The biggest difference between the 2016 election and 2020 was Fox News. Okay, so we'll set aside that he calls himself the golden goose, which is just weird. But there he's attacking Fox News. And what's interesting is that I saw a tweet from Yashar Ali of the president going through the replies of a 4-day-old Greg Gutfeld tweet, and then just retweeting all of the people who replied to Greg Gutfeld in a way that slammed Fox. And we get like, this is just a small section of it. Here is what his timeline looked like. He just went through, to all the tweets attacking Fox and started retweeting all of them. And apparently there is a reason for this. Axios is reporting that Trump has told friends he wants to start a digital media company to defeat Fox News and undermine it, perhaps in part because they called Arizona against him. But anyway, Ida, so I don't know what you think about him starting this media company, but at least the silver lining if he does do that is, if he's setting up to do that, he seems to accept, whether he'll admit it or not, that he's not going to be president soon.
You know, first of all, I'm confused because maybe it's some white thing I don't know about. Did he mean the goose that lays the golden eggs? I mean, what is the golden goose mean?
I guess he means the same thing, but you're right. The way you said it is what I remember from the fairy tales or whatever.
You know, it is interesting to watch. I did a Francesca show the other day, and they likened this to a cult. And I said it's more like a sect because it's really big in numbers, right? But the interesting thing about Donald Trump is that he knows that his followers are not about the facts or truth. And so he's trying to establish his fan base so that he can take them and keep capitalizing on them because he's made so much money off of them thus far. I mean, we have a president that sells merchandise, not a book, but merch, like comedians sell merch, you know, magicians sell merch, clowns sell merch. The president of the United States sells merch. So because he knows that nobody insults his base like he does, he insults their intelligence constantly. He is making a plan for the future because Fox News had to call it. They just can't keep exhausting their viewers with this nonsensical stuff. Even they gave up and were like, all right, the gig is up. We made enough money off of this. We got a lot. Now we got to figure out how we're going to do what we got to proceed forward with what's at hand. And they know that Donald Trump is over. I think he's exhausted everybody, even the people who followed him. So. Yeah. Him, Tommy Lahren, Candace Owens, all of them, they should all just move to Mississippi. Mississippi should succeed. And they should just have their own banana republic there. And they can just go back and forth with their troops. And they don't have to worry about the immigrants and the Muslims and the black people. And they can have sheriffs and, you know, restore law and order and do their own thing. And I don't know where they're going to get the money from because the Mississippi, you know, like I tweeted today, it's like that kid that says, I'm an adult, I'm moving out. Can I borrow some money for the deposit?
Yeah, if they do that, please take the QAnon people with you. I don't wanna have to deal with that going forward. That's one of the things I'm most worried about in the future. But yeah, you're totally right. The thing is, his group doesn't seem to care that they're being grifted. They want people on TV telling them that they're right, and that's what he's gonna give them. A source says he plans to wreck Fox, no doubt about it. And I want you to like think about how petty this is. So, and it's not like this is new, but Axios is reporting some Trump advisors think Fox News made a mistake with an early call seconded by the Associated Press of Biden winning Arizona. That enraged Trump and gave him something tangible to use in his attacks on the network. Okay, so he's still angry, like almost, it's like a full week and a half, I guess, at this point. Since the election, about the fact that they called Arizona, here's the thing, Biden did win Arizona. And even if he hadn't, he doesn't need Arizona to win. He doesn't need Pennsylvania to win. He could afford to lose Michigan. He could lose so much and still win. It seems so petty to focus on this one minor thing that had nothing to do with Trump eventually somehow winning the election. Like, it seems like he's focusing on this because he doesn't want to sort of zoom out and look at what his future actually looks like. It's just, it's pathetic, but clearly, judging by the Twitter activity at least, a lot of Fox viewers or former Fox viewers also believe that Fox is dead or dying, and instead they should go to OANN or Newsmax, or I don't even know what some of these are, but these other alternatives, I guess.
You know what's funny is that the people who made fun of those of others for participation ribbons are now crying for the participation ribbons. Arizona is just a participation ribbon for Trump. So what, you got those three electoral votes? Still makes not enough difference where, you know, and listen, they're gonna recount votes and you're still gonna lose and you're gonna elongate the embarrassment where you could have just gone. You could have just flipped the table over and just had a tantrum in that macho style that those dummies like, and then stormed out and say, you know what? I'm gonna form my own country and be the president of my own country. And then that would have been more respectable than to continuously try to undermine the process that made it possible for him to be president in the first place.
Exactly. Yeah. Yeah. Well, and I think it's really the worst of both worlds, because you're right. They could have done that sort of macho thing or whatever, but what they're doing is the whining, but all the while pretending that it's macho. It's like they can't even do the stupid, you know, like thick-skulled macho thing. Trump got this. So there was a tweet from Scott Baio, who had gone to some store and organized mugs so that it said, "Trump is still your president," and Trump retweeted it. That's the saddest thing, man. That's not even like a participation ribbon. At least you have the ribbon. Those mugs got rearranged. You don't even have that anymore, buddy. That is so sad. Anyway. So
Scott Baio came for me on Twitter with a whole army of, with a confederacy of dunces. And it was really funny because he came for me because he tweeted that Obama was a Muslim, and I responded, and then he flipped it and made it about the Second Amendment. And I never tweeted anything about guns. And he was like, "People like you want to take our guns away." And then I had all these gun people coming for me. I had to block like 200 people. But I did get to tweet him when Gary Marshall died. I said, "Look what you did, Chachi." And he was furious.
That is funny. Yeah, you hadn't said anything about guns. Yeah, I think a lot of these guns should be taken away. But I also acknowledge that very few Democratic politicians are actively trying to do that. Like, how do they just go year after year after year after year saying that they're gonna take your guns, they're gonna take your guns? When did they do it? How many guns did Obama take? Honestly, like, it's just pathetic. I know that you have a hobby and you want to be a victim, but like, I don't constantly say like they're coming for my magic cards. They're gonna take them away. I'm the victim. No, you can have your guns. We live in a crazy gun loving country. You can have an entire arsenal in your basement. Just go do it and shut up about it for a little bit. Anyway, I'm done with Trump. Let's move on to other stuff. I don't even want to think. It's just so sad, and hopefully he'll be out of the public awareness at least for the most part soon. But we probably won't even have that.
We need to talk about a relatively new show called the Republic, or UNFTR. As a Young Turks fan, you already know that the government, the media, and corporations are constantly peddling lies that serve the interests of the rich and powerful. But now there's a podcast dedicated to unraveling those lies, debunking the conventional wisdom. In each episode of the Republic, or UNFTR, the host delves into a different historical episode or topic that's generally misunderstood or purposely obfuscated by the so-called powers that be, featuring in-depth research, razor-sharp commentary, and just the right amount of vulgarity. The UNFTR podcast takes a sledgehammer to what you thought you knew about some of the nation's most sacred historical cows. But don't just take my word for it. The New York Times described UNFTR as consistently compelling and educational, aiming to challenge conventional wisdom and upend the historical narratives that were taught in school. For as the great philosopher Yoda once put it,
"You must unlearn what you have learned."
And that's true whether you're in Jedi training or you're uprooting and exposing all the propaganda and disinformation you've been fed over the course of your lifetime. So search for UNFDR in your podcast app today, and get ready to get informed, angered, and entertained all at the same time.
We're finding out a little bit more about Joe Biden's incoming cabinet and team, including the choice of chief of staff. Apparently, it is going to be Ron Klain, who's someone who I did not remember much about him and his service in office, but learning a lot. And turns out a lot of people pretty happy with this choice. Which we're going to turn to, but first, here's a little bit of a statement from Joe Biden when this was announced, saying Ron has been invaluable to me over the many years that we've worked together, including as we've rescued the American economy from one of the worst downturns in our history in 2009, and later overcame a daunting public health emergency in 2014. His deep, varied experience and capacity to work with people all across the political spectrum is precisely what I need in a White House chief of staff as we confront this moment of crisis and bring our country together again. I don't necessarily like the whole focus again on working with people across the political spectrum, but Biden is Biden and he's gonna say stuff like that. So Klain has been a senior advisor to Democratic presidents, vice presidents, candidates, and senators, served in the late 1980s as a top aide to Biden when he was chairman of the Senate Judiciary Committee, and ran Biden's office when he first became vice president. So that's his attachment to Joe Biden. But in addition, he served as the chief of staff to the former vice president Al Gore and the staff director of the Senate Democratic Leadership Committee. He has worked with several Democratic presidential campaigns, including Biden's 1988 and 2008 presidential campaigns. He was also the lead Democratic lawyer for Gore during the 2000 presidential election recount. That's obviously, that didn't go well, but and man, is it crazy if Biden's been running for president for like decades. But anyway, did you have any thoughts about this choice of Ron Klain?
Well, I mean, I do have a choice. I mean, I do have something to say about the language that we keep hearing in terms of, let's get back to the America that it used to be. Let's get back to the old school racism. I think we need to use that word and see that these people are in terms of people in this country changing anytime soon, or at least not during this presidency.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't like that language either. I hope, my hope is that it's Biden's rhetoric. Like that's the theme of his campaign, so he's gonna say stuff like that. We're gonna see if it's what he actually does, the choices he makes. At least in this one, it's looking okay. Really surprised to see some of the reactions. I'm gonna give you three reactions, and I have never seen these reactions line up before. So AOC tweeted, good news and an encouraging choice. Ilhan Omar tweeted, excellent choice, congratulations Ron Klain. What a blessing to slowly be moving away from chaos. So AOC, Ilhan Omar both see this news positively. You know who else says? Hugh Hewitt, who says it's a terrific choice. He's been a serious student of the risk of pandemic for a long time. I've never seen AOC, Ilhan Omar, and Hugh Hewitt respond the same way to any bit of news ever. So that seems like a good sign.
That's how traumatized the country is. Mm-hmm. But I did see that Biden had made some plans to really seek out what was happening with the immigration in America, and I really salute that. But I do know that after saying that African Americans had his back, I would love to hear language about Black people in this country. We've heard about immigrants, we've heard about Indians, we've heard, and I'm Latina, a child of an immigrant. I'm here for it. So I would like to know when we're gonna hear about what's gonna happen to improve the conditions of Black people in this country. The ones who showed out in droves to make sure that they won, and Kamala also, who, you know, as a Black woman, called on Black women to show up, and they showed up in Atlanta, they showed up everywhere, all over the country. And I would like to know what the plans are for Black people in this country and for brown people as well. I mean, the rhetoric is cool, but you said you would get to work. I wanna hear it. And I think that, you know, all of the choices, John, you know how I feel. If they're not progressive, for me, I just take them as much as I can and say, is this a step in the direction that we wanna go in? Because at that point, that's what it is for us. But I don't celebrate establishment politicians because they're gonna restore something that initially was painful for my people anyway.
That's true. Yeah, and we'll have to see about those announcements. I mean, we've been tracking as the information's come out, like we had, you know, they formed the coronavirus task force. We got a little bit of news about what they plan to do on climate today. We're gonna be talking about immigration, but we're gonna have to see, because there's a lot of areas that need to be addressed very soon. But really fast, let's turn to a little bit different info about Ron Klain. Joe Biden's pick for chief of staff, Ron Klain, was actually in the news earlier this year because of his experience dealing with Ebola under the Obama administration. He was one of the individuals that was turned to as coronavirus was bearing down on our country. And now looking back at some of what he had to say, kind of wish that some of the politicians had listened to people with his sort of experience at the very least. They obviously weren't going to bring him into the Trump administration, but maybe pay a little bit of attention. Here he is actually on February 5th of this year before the House Committee on Foreign Affairs talking about the efforts that so far been put in place to deal with coronavirus.
We don't have a travel ban, we have a travel band-aid right now. First, before it was imposed, 300,000 people came here from China in the previous month, so the horse is out of the barn. Second, what we have restricted is not travel to or from China, but passports to and from China. There's no restriction on Americans going back and forth. There are warnings. People should abide by those warnings. But today, 30 planes will land in Los Angeles that either originated in Beijing or came here on one stops. 30 in San Francisco, 25 in New York City. Okay. So unless we think that the color of the passport someone carries is a meaningful public health restriction, we have not placed a meaningful public health restriction. And then to get to your question, exempt from the president's travel restriction, of course, is the import of goods from China. And of course, the people who fly the planes and drive the boats that bring those goods from China. We couldn't ban that activity. We vitally need that. 90% of the antibiotics in this country come from China. All kinds of vital medical supplies. Dr. Nuzzo mentioned the PPE we will use to treat people. So travel bans, even putting aside Dr. Nuzzo's concern, that's not what we're imposing. That's not what exists. What we should be focused on is monitoring the people who are here, who have been in China in the past 14 days. That is complicated. That is hard. We built a path-breaking system to do that in the Ebola response. This is much larger and more complicated. And I don't think we've heard answers. I hope Congress will get them. But what the administration is doing on that, which really should be our public health priority.
Yeah. And so, Ida, you know, at the time, that was Trump's apparent one thing that he was willing to do was shut down some travel between China and the US, even though, like, and this was February 5th. This isn't looking back and saying that wasn't enough. This was Ron Klain at the time saying, this isn't even what he says it is. People are already in the US who have it. You can't just ignore those people, let them go about their business, because we know how that is going to turn out. And indeed, it actually did.
Yeah, and you know that there is a place that lives in politicians, whether they're getting checks from corporations or not, where you can see that there's a sense of accountability and some moral base, right? Where you can see that they want to do a job. And so that is, I think, what is faith building in terms of this, because you know, he along with many people were saying this at the beginning of this pandemic. It was Donald Trump and his, you know, groupies that were denying, and all, and when I say groupies, I'm talking about media, I'm talking about fellow politicians, people in his administration. They were all, you know, all singing the same song. And now here we are, almost 250,000 people gone, that are people that belong to people. I hate when they put the word only in front of it. And there were people like this saying, we have to be logical and reasonable when we talk about this pandemic. And our president, who has such a low EQ, is incapable of doing that. And here we are. So I appreciate it because I read about him and I know that he was also someone who was very effective in helping with the Ebola crisis in this country. And so it's also good to know that he's been there before, and he's, even though this is bigger, but it's just, you hear these voices, and these voices were out here and they were drowned out by Donald Trump's foolishness, and the mainstream media kept giving them play, and we didn't hear the voices that we needed to hear to save lives.
I agree. And look, obviously, he's not going to be in charge of the response to COVID. He's going to be the chief of staff, but he obviously was very important during that time. And there's no way that the chief of staff isn't going to be working with that team and making sure that Biden is up to date with everything they're doing. So we only have a few staffing announcements made. Him being chosen, especially in this time with the challenges that we are facing with COVID, I think is a very good sign. Not to say that Klain is gonna like push for Biden to be super progressive or anything like that, but you know, we do have to stop, you know, 1500 plus people dying every single day. Every day around 4:30, I wait to see refreshing the COVID tracking project's daily sort of roundup of how bad COVID has gotten. And the report for yesterday is apocalyptic. It makes the past days that we considered horrible look like fairy tales now. States reported 1.4 million new tests, which is good, but we were supposed to be at like 3 million tests back like 6 months ago. So 144,000 cases, an all-time high. Now, really fast, I know that there are other sources that put it even higher. Johns Hopkins, I think, has. I go with COVID just because they have their methodology. It might not be quite right, but at least it's consistent with past days, so we can see the growth. You have over 65,000 people hospitalized. You have, let's see, 1,421 deaths, the most deaths for several months now, pushing the 7-day average back above 1,000. 144,000 cases, 60 was considered horrifying back when that happened, and now that's nothing. And Ida, when you, I know that we just had the election and we're worried about a coup. I know there's lots of things going on, but I don't feel like we're acting as if things are twice as bad as they were a couple months ago.
No, because the news cycle, the way that this works, and that is why it is important for people to turn to places like this so that they can get information about what's really happening in the country, because the mainstream media is going with what's the hot topic of this, Whoopi Goldberg's take on something, than it is that human beings are dying. But you know, it's just a friendly reminder of this country's toxic capitalism, because the majority of the people who are dying are black and brown essential workers in lower socioeconomic communities, that America doesn't value them the way that they value everybody else. Because we kept hearing about all of the people in from Ben Carson was the last one who was part of these COVID rallies that Donald Trump kept having. And they cared about those people because those people matter, because they're part of the elite group. And at the end of the day, elitists care about elitists, and it doesn't matter what side of the political aisle they are, money sticks with money. But we are sitting here watching in real time people who are lacking resources that are showing up for us, even in this pandemic, losing their lives, and we don't talk about it. And it's getting worse, and it's gonna be horrible in the colder months. They said this in February, they said it in March, they said it in April, and no one was listening. And now here we are again after these major, look at it in Indiana, they had all of this, they resumed business, and now they have to shut down in the areas where people are. And mind you, those are also poor white people who are dying. So I have to remind white people that are sometimes jumping on these bandwagons is that you are poor, and when you are poor, you matter to them just as much as people of color and people in marginalized groups. And now they're suffering, and they're still waiting on this magic school bus to come, and I'll say school bus, the short one, to come rescue them.
Yeah, it just, and no help is coming. I mean, when you look at the White House, Trump isn't doing his job anymore. You know, not specifically just not doing COVID.
Oh, wait a minute. Can I just say this? I'm sorry to cut you off. And I know I'm being obnoxious, but this has been on my soul for the last couple of days. Donald Trump tweeted about numbers. Every single time he tweeted about numbers, it had to do with election numbers and not casualties of coronavirus in this country. That should let you know that he doesn't care about the people in this country. He cares about power. Look at his Twitter feed. He's bigging up the Virginia governor, Big John, Big Jeb, whatever his name, Boss Hog, whatever y'all want to call him. He's bigging up these people. And people are dying in real time. He is not acknowledging the deaths, the unemployment, the homelessness, the evictions. All he keeps talking about is this election and how the media has turned on him. That should let you know how much he cares about the people of the country.
Exactly. Yeah, he's tweeted more, you know, today about Fox ratings than about the fact that we're experiencing skyrocketing cases. You know, Mike Pence, who remember is like sort of in charge of the COVID thing, as the numbers were going up over the past few days, he announced that he was going on vacation. Now the vacation has been canceled, but not because of this. It's because he needs to be involved in the fight to, you know, overthrow the outcome of the election. So they're done. Trump hasn't been to one of these COVID meetings in literally months. I don't know if anything is being done right now. Like if we could go and go through the White House, check in every meeting room, would anyone be talking about COVID? I don't see any reason to believe that they would right now. Things are getting bad. As Ida pointed out, geographically it's changing, you know, for the worse for some areas. You can take a look here at the different regions, and the COVID tracking project shows that more people are now dying across the Midwest than even at the peak of the summer surge in the South. So take a look at that second block, the Midwest. Those numbers on the right hand side of it are going up so fast. And you can see regional cases per 1 million people. If you go to this next one, you're going to see the Midwest is just being devastated. Now, all of the regions are going up, including, you know, the West here. California's experienced a lot of cases. It's going up everywhere, but those are not the same curves. The Midwest is skyrocketing, and they're not doing anything. They're not wearing masks, they're not socially distancing. They're trying to pretend that it's not happening is not going to save your life. That is clear. And the 1400 today, God only knows in a week what that number is going to be. If we're 144,000 cases today, what is that dark winter that's being predicted going to look like? When we see these numbers, remember the last time, the second wave of the first wave, the numbers started going up. And what happened? People talked about it a lot. They started changing their behavior. I don't see that happening this time. And it still got bad the last time. If we don't change our behavior, God only knows how many millions of people are. Sorry, how many people are going to end up getting this, you know, just by inauguration, let alone by the time we're done with this thing?
You know, also the missing information that was given to people when Donald Trump allegedly had COVID-19 and his recovery, because remember, those people are the people who laud him for being so strong and powerful, but without realizing and understanding the type of resources that he has that they don't have. So I'm no psychologist, but this mass hysteria that's upon us in this country with people who don't believe that it's real. I know people who've recovered from COVID who are still dealing with the after effect and the issues that come with having COVID. It's not a walk in the park for everybody, and everyone who's had it did not have pre-existing conditions. And I know it feels like basic to have to repeat this, but the truth is, I mean, these conservative media outlets have been picking up stuff with me because I feel like I'm their latest target. If they could just quote me on anything, I would really hope that it would be this, that COVID is real, people are dying, and that, you know, it is not something you just get over because you're strong. And you know, you can move cattle. Like, we really have to really understand that they don't know genetically how it affects you, and it could be different for anybody, for everyone. And people are still dying, and so they are deluded by this because he allegedly had it and kicked it, and everybody around him kicked it. And then those who like Herman Cain who died, they don't even acknowledge. So yeah, it's really part of their whole the marketing scheme that they have.
Yeah, and you know, the election night party that he had is looking like it was another super spreader thing. So many of the aides and Mark Meadows got it, and this morning Corey Lewandowski apparently has it too. And yeah, as you pointed out, Ben Carson has it. So this is what happens when you don't take any precautions, you spread it. The difference though, and this is to the point that you've been making throughout the show, is when they get it, they get secret monkey medicine and they'll be fine. They've got a team of doctors watching them every second of every day, making sure that they're going to be okay. None of the people going to the rallies are going to get that. There's no helicopter waiting for them. There's no special serums or antibodies or anything like that. The people that are dying are regular people. They're not the economic elites that are dying. Really fast, I want to show one clip just as an I think this is a great description of how bad things have gotten. I want you to take a look at this video of Sanjay Gupta talking about the current state of the pandemic.
I mean, that's what we're seeing here. And I think the idea that so many of these deaths that are happening in the United States are preventable just adds to that idea that this is a true humanitarian crisis. The Doctors Without Borders have come to the United States to do their work. They go to the hottest spots in the world. They look at the earth and say, where are we needed? Well, they're needed here in the United States right now. So I know it's tough to hear. I've already gotten a lot of emails and social about the fact that I call this a humanitarian disaster, but I stand by it. It is. And hopefully it inspires people to do something about it.
Yeah, Doctors Without Borders is coming here to try to help us, because they realize that our government doesn't give a damn what happens. They barely were pretending to care about the pandemic before the election. Now that we're through the election, they don't care at all. The mask is off. I guess that's quite appropriate. So we're just left to whatever happens, happens. I spent months, almost every day, talking about all the signs that they were pursuing a herd immunity strategy. And this is what it looks like. We are weeks into it now of just rampant spread around the country, as many people getting sick as is necessary, lots of people dying. And the idea is that hopefully someday everyone will have had it. And I guess then we're gonna be safe, even though that hasn't actually been established medically. It's a disaster, and it's a disaster that's playing out in real time.
Yeah, and they keep with the whole herd immunity thing. It's like everyone is a doctor who has a Twitter account, who has a Facebook account. Everybody has these theories. But you know how I would love for these theories to be correct, because I'd rather people live than to be right in an argument all day. And I think that's the difference between us and a lot of these people. I hope I'm wrong. I don't want to see people die. I don't want to see people continue to die. But I mean, they continue to feed these people this. I'm in Florida right now. I'm afraid to leave home because I know that there are people walking around. They're not wearing their masks. And listen, I've talked to enough doctors. I'm a conspiracy theorist myself. You know, I have my own theories. So I've talked to enough doctors, nurses who are friends of mine who have assured me they're not getting any bonus checks because they declare that people have COVID.
Yep.
They have to wear their masks because they can't compromise their families. And they really have said that the masks do make a difference, you know? And so it's just sad to see so many people, you know, compromising their well-being because they are fanatics of someone who doesn't even care about them.
Yeah, doesn't care if they live or die. Here is some of what Joe Biden apparently plans to do on immigration once he is sworn in. After he's sworn in, his administration will move to fully restore an Obama-era program that shields 640,000 undocumented immigrants who were brought to the US as children from deportation, halting Mr. Trump's unsuccessful efforts thus far to end it. That's according to people familiar with the plans talking to CBS News. The incoming administration also intends to rescind Mr. Trump's travel and immigration restrictions on 13 mostly African or predominantly Muslim countries. So right there you have protections for the Dreamers, the end to the Muslim ban. You also have them looking to implement a 100-day freeze on deportations while his administration issues guidance narrowing who can be arrested by immigration agents. Obama-era memos that prioritize the deportation of immigrants with criminal convictions, recent border crossers, and those who enter the country illegally more than once were scrapped back in 2017 by Mr. Trump so that no unauthorized immigrant would be exempted from being arrested and removed from the country. So we'll have more in just a moment, but so far they have a freeze on deportations while the policy is looked at, and God only knows what they'll end up with. But you also have the end of the Muslim ban and protections from Dreamers. Those are some pretty high profile changes, at least right there, Ida.
Yeah, you know what? And let's not look at this as a humanitarian act. Anyone who understands the economics of America knows that a lot of undocumented people keep this economy healthy and do a lot of jobs here for the little bit of money that a lot of people won't do. And as I always remind people, even in here, there in the great state of California, when the Farmers for Trump participated in those immigration raids, and then later were begging people because they didn't have food because there was nobody there to mine those crops. It is that we undermine the value of what immigrants, contribute to this country and its economy. And, you know, the people who built this country, the black slaves who built this country and built it from the ground up. And then now you look at these immigrants who are doing all of these jobs that a lot of people don't want to do. And Joe Biden is just sharp to that. Why would you get rid of DACA? Those are future doctors, future lawyers, future people that are gonna that have come here with a motivation to excel, because the countries that they come from are so, you know, are so devastated by all of the damage that we've done to them. So when we sit here and we talk about him doing this, it's a smart move for him to make. And, you know, in some ways trying to correct some of the wrongs of the Obama administration that he participated in, and some of the stuff that they did, because we can't be honest if we're just gonna blame all of it on Donald Trump and his administration.
Yeah, totally. And while all of this looks good and we're gonna do some more, this is not an area where we can afford to not watch Biden and his administration virtually every day, because we know what happened under Obama. Yeah. So these are good signs, and I'll give you some more in a sec, but we do have to be vigilant. So a source says that new guidance would be designed to curb so-called collateral arrests, which are apprehensions of immigrants who are not the target of US ICE operations, but are nevertheless taken into custody because they're in the country without legal status. Biden is also going to discontinue the Trump administration's policy of requiring non-Mexican migrants to wait in Mexico for the duration of their US asylum cases, which can stretch for a very long period of time and lead to a lot of victimization of those refugees. You also have, let's see, the ending of three bilateral agreements that Trump has with Guatemala, El Salvador, and Honduras that allows the US to send rejected asylum seekers directly there, which in many of these cases, people are looking for asylum because they're worried about being murdered. And so when you send them back to their home countries, many of them get murdered. So thankfully there'll be less of that. There are other changes as well. You know, we're a bit late in the show, so I will simply say that there's some great write-up. A fairly comprehensive re-envisioning of the policy, but we're also gonna have to see going forward. I mean, Democrats tend to be a little bit better on this stuff than Republicans, but the militarization of the border, that has been happening under both sides for literally decades. The deportations have been going up under both sides for literally decades. And so all of that is something that you have to bear in mind, even if we're lucky enough to get all of these changes made in the beginning months of the Biden administration. Okay, well, with that, I think that we can get one more topic in before we're done with all this stuff. And Ida, I know some of this has been pretty serious. Why don't we end on a somewhat lighter note?
Yep.
Matt Gaetz, for some reason, tweeted this. Tiffany Trump had a photo. So he tweeted to her, fire, heart, heart's eyes, thumbs up, which I think we can all agree is the thirstiest tweet that has ever been sent in the history of it, of Twitter. I don't know what that is. We're gonna have some responses, but Ida, he's a congressman. That's the president's daughter. And the only thing he didn't put is an eggplant. Like, all the rest of it's there.
You know, what's funny is that Matt Gaetz is probably one of the most embarrassing members of our, you know, political. I mean, the way that he kind of tokenized Ernesto, and that was when he had that exchange that we talked about earlier with the congressman, and he pointed out that he was not racist because he had this, was it adopted son or whatever. But it just seems like he always works his way, works an angle to try to maintain some sort of relevance. And he feels like an actor or rapper or anybody whose career isn't going anymore well anymore. And now they have to just chime in on politics, and they realize they can get a little bit of action on that in that direction. But I just think it's embarrassing to watch him, because I feel like he's so performative with his politics. And I think that it's an embarrassment. And, you know, I'm in Florida right now and we want to wash. We need a wash.
Florida's been needing it for a while, actually. Okay, so let me give you a few more responses. Some of them more serious, some of them funnier. But Natalie Montalongo tweeted, below is a tweet from a sitting member of Congress. And here is a message for women everywhere. You are better than this man and you should run for Congress. Oh God, I would love to see someone take out Matt Gaetz. Let's make that happen. Molly Jong Fast tweeted, does this feel like a classy thing to be doing on the internet? To which the only reasonable answer is no, that's a very weird thing to be doing. Kate Smith asks, to make DC boring again. The producers were nice enough to put in my tweet, yep, the thirst heard round the world.
I agree.
But I love, my favorite one was probably from Emma Vigeland, who quote retweeted it with a prescription for Matt Gaetz for horny be gone. But anyway, it's just so, he's a congressman and I get it. Like, you're supposed to pretend that the Trumps are the best and at everything in every way. And I guess, you know, like doing this thing with her is a way of making Trump like you better. Although bear in mind, it's a dangerous one because there's only one person that Trump is proven to be okay with sexualizing his daughters, and that's him. But anyway, Matt Gaetz, you're at the best of times, you're a tool and you're ridiculous and embarrassing. But in this particular case, yep, the crime is clear. You committed the crime of being too horny. And so the sentence is equally clear. Go to horny jail.
Yeah, my tweet is, does your daddy know his name yet? Remember, he didn't know his name. Mm-hmm.
God, American politics, gosh, is a joke, Ida. How do you as a comedian joke about something as inherently ridiculous as this? It's already, the punchline is the setup.
Yeah, you don't. And that's why I stepped away from it, because, you know, that's the thing that Donald Trump has semi-normalized in this country, is a behavior that is supposedly emboldened and direct and in your face. But it's just, it's like Fat Albert used to say, it's like school on Saturday, no class. And so I just sit here and I watch and these are the people who make fun of or point out, you know, about people in lower from social economic backgrounds and call a ghetto and say that we, you know, we don't speak correctly or that our subjects and verbs don't agree. And here they are behaving this way publicly and it's acceptable because they're white and they have money. And so I just look at it and say, look what he's brought to, as if we already didn't have enough problems politically in this country from what has been happening for hundreds of years. This now, and now you bring this. So this is the classic meme. This is how it started. This is where we are now. and the where we are now is just a big old trash can that's on fire. Yeah,
100%. Okay, that was a fun end of the show. Ida, as always, thank you so much for joining us. Who is your guest on the next Truth Serum? Who can we expect to see?
Me. So it'll be me. I have Ben is coming on. Ben Dixon is going to come on in a couple of weeks. I'm actually going to have some comedians come on and talk about politics. I'm forcing them to come on and roast the year.
Yeah.
You know, and then yes. And then I want you to come back because I really want us to talk about climate change and really break it down from the perspective of communities of color. Cause I think that we don't understand, a lot of us don't know that really is affecting us.
Awesome. 100%. Had a great experience last time. Everybody needs to follow, whether on Twitter, YouTube, all the different sites for Truth Serum. And Ida, thank you again. Great to have you on.
Always. Thank you.
Donald Trump hasn't been making a lot of public appearances since his loss in last week's election. He hasn't really been speaking much at all. And look, we need someone who knows Trump's mind. What is he thinking about? What is he likely to do? And there's one person I trust for that sort of analysis, and that is the editor and founder of DCReport.org, David K. Johnson. Welcome back to the Damage Report.
Well, thank you for having me on again, John.
Always glad to have you here. We've been talking about Trump and what he's been doing for some time. This is the first that we've spoken since the election where he did lose. Before we move on to all the other matters that we have to get to, how did you feel about the outcome of the election?
Well, I think that the Democrats still have a big problem because of the number of down ballot people and the fact that Trump got 71 million votes. The party of working people doesn't know how to connect with working people. And you'll notice around the country that those members of Congress who ran on Medicaid for all or universal health care did quite well. And I think it's very clear what the people who appeal to Trump want. They have suffered for 50 years. They are making less money, as of the most recent data, 2018, less money than in 1973, 45 years earlier. In fact, they're basically getting only 50 weeks income or 52 weeks of the year compared to 1973. And why the Democrats don't get this is one of the great mysteries of American politics.
Yeah, it was frustrating. You know, obviously good to see him lose, but bad to not see him lose in the sort of landslide that I had personally hoped for, especially considering, you know, how the pandemic has gone. Now, the last time that we spoke, you had said that one thing you were not worried about was Donald Trump remaining in office if he loses. Considering what he's been saying and doing, what his team has been doing, do you maintain that you're still confident that he's not gonna be able to somehow hoodwink the American people, that he will be dragged out of there at some point?
He'll be out of there at 12:01 on January 20th. I don't expect him to go to the inauguration. He might well go to Mar-a-Lago. He's even said he might flee the country. But he can do enormous damage since then. And you'll notice since I first wrote this 2 weeks ago, I think it's been 2 weeks, he's doing political vandalism. And that phrase made the New York Times a few days later. Mm-hmm. By not allowing the funds for transitions, about $9.9 million under the 1963 Presidential Transition Act, by not assigning FBI agents and Office of Personnel Management agents to check people out for security clearances, and a host of other things, the Trump administration is humbling the Biden administration. They're trying to make sure that they will not succeed. They're putting our national security at risk. This is absolutely outrageous conduct. And that all of these Republican office holders, with four exceptions that I know of, are supporting it, tells you that the Republicans have become the party of Trump, that their leaders below Trump are all moral jellyfish. They're spineless, they're blind, and they're perfectly happy to be cast into the chaos created by Trump.
I like that's a good metaphor there. So you're confident that his schemes are not going to work. What do you think about both Trump and many of those Republicans that you're talking about? That they're obviously saying that that there's voter fraud, that these challenges are serious, but that doesn't necessarily mean that they actually believe that they are, or that they believe that any of these little plots could result in Trump staying in office. Do you think that there are true believers? Do you think that Trump is a true believer? Or is there some other reason that they're going through all of this?
Oh, Donald is not a true believer. Donald is just emotionally unequipped to accept anything other than he is the ruler for life of the US, if not the whole world. As for the rest of them, you know, you are old enough, John, to remember when Republicans claimed to be the party of principles and ideas. And we've seen that that's a complete fraud. And this is not good for the country, by the way. We want to have competing political parties who are putting forth different ideas. But ever since 26 years ago, I think now, Grover Norquist said that bipartisanship is date rape. We have seen this cleaving of the country into an attitude on the right of our way or the highway. And the Democrats saying, oh, we're nice people, and why don't we sit down and have tea? Mm-hmm. It's been terrible for the country and will continue to be terrible. But you watch, Donald Trump will try to be the shadow president in exile. He's already telling people, turn off Fox News and go to OAN and Newsmax, which are just crazy places. I was visiting both of them today to just make stuff up or take the littlest thing they like and turn it into a conclusion that the election was fraudulent. There's been no evidence of widespread fraud and nothing close enough to overturn the election.
Yeah. You know, as to that point about OAN and Newsmax, I mean, there's some reporting saying that he's once again sort of thinking about the possibility of setting up some sort of Trump TV, maybe a purely digital thing, which seems to imply that he doesn't expect that he's going to stay in office if that's something he's planning for. But maybe it's just a backup plan. What do you think about the possibility of that and how it would be received by his fans?
Well, you know, all of 32 years that I've known Donald, one of the characteristics of him is he's lazy. He doesn't do things. Other people do them and he pays them for them. He didn't build Trump Tower or develop it. He hired people, Dare Scott to design it and HRH to build it. And so if there is a Trump TV, if OAN were to rebrand itself as Trump TV, he's just going to get paid to whine and complain. You're not going to see him do any actual work. You know, whatever you think of Roger Ailes, you have to admire that the guy was hardworking and set out to achieve the goals he set for himself and for that organization. Donald's not like that. Donald is just, he's lazy. He's 74 years old. And by the way, he's depressed right now. I pay a lot of attention, and I always have since we first met back in the 80s, to how Donald walks. And there are days when he walks smartly, like he's still a cadet at the military academy he was sent to for misbehaving when he was the summer he turned 13. And there are days when he lumbers like a deeply depressed man. You look at the video of him laying the wreath on the 11th. You will see a man who is forcing himself to walk.
Wow. Wow. I actually had not noticed that. That is interesting. Okay, so Trump is doing quite a lot of whining, whether to he thinks increase his chance of staying in office or for some other thing. But you know, that's sort of on Twitter. Behind the scenes, I mean, you've been talking about, as you said, the political vandalism, I think was what you called it. And you identified the pretty scary firings, as well as, I don't know if you heard about this, but that when some of the individuals who were fired were leaving, they were given a clap out. And then apparently they had been, the White House had been wanting a list of names of people who clapped for those who were leaving to potentially fire them as well. So what are some other things that you think we would be wise to watch for between now and Inauguration Day? What other sort of vandalism could he get up to?
Well, you're seeing a classic authoritarian purge that's going on right now. Be very worried if he starts firing any generals or admirals. He does not have the support of our military officer corps. And a very important point, very few Americans seem to know. Under our Constitution, military officers take an oath to uphold the Constitution, not to follow the orders of the president. Only grunts and sailors also take an oath to follow the orders of the president. So if Trump starts firing generals and admirals, get very worried about what's going on. I anticipate that he will bring lawsuits. They may attempt to prosecute some people. That's going to be very difficult for Bill Barr to do since it could expose him to risk. I do think it's possible he can talk Mike Pence into a deal where he resigns on the morning of the 20th and Pence pardons him. That's fraught with risk for Mike Pence because committing a government act for anything of value makes it bribery and a crime. Being president of the United States, even for 1 hour, is something of value. And were Mike Pence to do this, I would certainly hope that he would be indicted, convicted, and sent to prison. And I hope he has lawyers and advisors smart enough to say, you don't want to do that, pal.
I totally agree there, but could Trump not just preemptively pardon himself for whatever might be coming when he leaves office?
No. The July decision by the US Supreme Court saying that the grand jury in Manhattan was entitled to his business and accounting records is very clearly written by Chief Justice Roberts. And I don't like Chief Justice Roberts' jurisprudence. I read his decisions. But he is an honest man. He writes opinions based on his view of the world. And that opinion makes it very clear that a president cannot pardon himself because that would put the president above the law. And remember that earlier this year, George Consovoy, one of Donald Trump's lawyers, told a federal judge in an open court hearing that he could shoot and murder someone on Fifth Avenue, and that the New York Police Department could not investigate that crime. That was a serious strategic blunder. It also represents what Donald thinks. Donald believes that he is all powerful. He says, I have an Article 2 that lets me do anything I want, which tells you, as I've said for years, he doesn't know what's in the Constitution because it doesn't say that. But It's very clear that a self-pardon will not stand, and a pardon under the terms I just described by Mike Pence may or may not stand. That's one I'm not clear if the Supreme Court would say that's a sham and disallow it, or they would uphold it and say the issue here is whether to prosecute Mike Pence for improper conduct, but the pardon stands. But do expect that he will preemptively pardon a bunch of people, including his daughter and his son-in-law. And remember this, under a 1925 Supreme Court decision called Burdick, if you accept a pardon, Burdick refused one on the grounds that he was wrongly imprisoned or was innocent. If you accept a pardon, you are confessing to being a criminal. You are admitting that you committed offenses against the United States, and you lose your Fifth Amendment self-incrimination rights. So if they're pardoned, I think it'd be very interesting when we have an investigation into what role did Jared Kushner play in the murder of Kamal Khashoggi of the Washington Post and in the rounding up of rich Saudis to collect taxes from them by MBS, his friend, the de facto ruler of Saudi Arabia.
Exactly. One other topic that you've written about recently is the possibility that depending on the way these Georgia Senate runoffs can go in a little bit more than a month away, that Biden could face a Mitch McConnell-led Senate after all, that it would be back to sort of what the Obama years were like, at least at the tail end. What do you think about the prospects for Biden getting much done if Mitch McConnell has the Republican majority he wants?
It's going to be very difficult. 12 years ago, Mitch McConnell made clear that his intention was to prevent Obama from being a successful president. McConnell's not going to do anything, however, that will harm the Republican Party. So he can't say no to all coronavirus relief. What he'll do is try to severely limit the relief that goes to the people who really need it and funnel as much money as he can to people who don't need it. We've written a DC report about the enormous amount of cash the big companies have on hand right now, in good part because of coronavirus relief, while small businesses are folding left and right. So there'll be a great effort to hobble. One of the things McConnell could do with a majority is just refuse to confirm people, roughly 1,000 appointees, to their positions in the government. Now, he's not going to refuse to approve everybody. That would damage the Republicans. Refusing to approve a lot of people in specific jobs would hobble the administration. And that's not good for the country either. So I think we should be very worried that what's happened with the Republican Party here is they've gone from being a party steering us away from the New Deal since Reagan into a party of vandalism and destruction of our government, along with their long-term goals of enhancing corporate power and minimizing the ability of ordinary people to get redress for their grievances, which is a right they have under the First Amendment to our Constitution.
Well, and let me ask you about one aspect of those blocking people who are nominated. Under Obama, it was very difficult to get any judge, obviously Supreme Court, but even not Supreme Court justices, regular judges to be confirmed. Is there any reason to believe that if Breyer retires in a year, that there's any chance that Biden is going to be able to get a Supreme Court justice?
Well, that's one where I'm going to take the cop out and we'll have to see. The person who's talked about retiring is Clarence Thomas, a man who never should have been appointed to the Supreme Court. I'm sure he'd make a fine traffic court judge somewhere. But both Breyer and Clarence Thomas are likely candidates for retirement. The problem that Mitch McConnell would face if either one leaves is what to do about 8-8 decisions, the 4-4 decisions by the court. What to do if anybody moves away from the majority that the conservatives expect. And I don't expect Mitch McConnell to do anything other than try to make sure that only right-wing judges, whether qualified or not, serve on the bench. You know that 10% of all the sitting federal judges, Article III judges, are Trump appointees, every 10th one. Many of them were never vetted, that is, their backgrounds investigated. And I'm sure over time, we're going to find that a number of them are just awful judges who are there, like Antonin Scalia was in the last half of his term on the years on the Supreme Court, to fulfill their bigoted view of the world rather than engage in serious legal thought. as long as a judge is honest, we should be satisfied with their performance. But we've seen again and again the Republicans put forth people who are not honest about who they are, their jurisprudence. And we've had some people who have just awful, awful views of the world. Neil Gorsuch, for example, who I think is basically an honest guy, you know, wrote in a minority opinion when he was a federal appellate judge about a truck driver who was freezing to death. The only reason he didn't freeze to death was a phone call woke him up in his truck in 14 below zero weather. And his air brakes were frozen, so he disconnected his load and, well, almost out of fuel, got himself to a diner where he warmed up and didn't die. And Judge Gorsuch said the company properly fired him for abandoning his load. He took the position that you should die or be fired. That is immoral. There is no other way to describe his arguing the strict reading of the law. And by the way, I don't read the statute as he does, but I see how he did that. But to read a law that says die or be fired, you shouldn't be a judge anywhere if you say that.
Yeah, I agree. But you might have come up with a good tagline for the Republican Party going forward. In any event, appreciate you taking the time, David, to join us. Always glad to hear your perspective on politics and hope that going forward, we can keep up the conversation. Thanks again.
Certainly, and thank you, John.
Thanks for listening to the full episode of The Damage Report. Support our work, listen ad-free, access members-only bonus content, and more by subscribing to Apple Podcasts at apple.co/TYT. I'm your host, John Adirola. I'll see you soon.